in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the May 12th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. How much would you pay for an autographed pair of sneakers once worn by basketball legend Michael Jordan? The white, black, and red Air Jordan 1s, made by Nike, are featured in an online auction this week, and organizers say they could fetch up to $150,000. The auction is taking place as The Last Dance, a TV documentary series about Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, winds down. Our friend Dan Friedel has been watching the documentary, and Dan is also watching that Air Jordan sneaker auction. The shoes being auctioned off were worn by Michael Jordan in 1985, when the Air Jordans first made a splash.
I think it's been about 35 years that the Air Jordan shoe has been on the market, and there was an episode of the documentary that discussed how his agent brought him around to these big shoe companies in the mid-80s to kind of say, hey, this guy is going to be a hero. It's time to get on the Michael Jordan train. And in that era, the big shoe company in the NBA was Converse. Players like Magic Johnson and Larry Bird wore Converse shoes, and Converse was known as the basketball shoe, the gym shoe, you know, going way back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. In pop culture at the time, Adidas was a big deal. If you remember, hip-hop groups like Run DMC were wearing Adidas shoes with the tongue out and no shoelaces. So for him, a young African-American man, he was identifying with the Adidas brand. And Adidas as a company was struggling, so they certainly didn't have hundreds of thousands of dollars to devote to marketing this. You know, he was a great college player, but nobody knew he was going to become Michael Jordan. So the third choice was Nike. And Nike was this company in Oregon that had made its name in the track and field world and the long distance running world. But it wasn't really known as a basketball shoe company, but they decided to get on board. You know, you had the executive, Phil Knight, and they made a deal, and it was probably turned out to be one of the best endorsement deals in history for Nike early on. I think there was a statistic that said something like a successful deal for Nike would have been to sell maybe $500,000 worth of Air Jordan shoes in the first year. And the number turned out to be, you know, 10 or 20 times more than that. Like, it was like $20 million worth of Air Jordan shoes came out of this early part of the partnership between Nike and Michael Jordan. And then on and on and on. Of course, you know, at one point, I think his endorsement contract with Nike was worth way more than his salary with the Chicago Bulls.
He won six NBA titles during his playing career. And yet, I don't know whether the series brings it out. He hasn't been quite so successful in management. I think now he's with the Charlotte Hornets, primary owner. And they've basically been either a mediocre or losing team under his managerial role. Any thoughts?
And actually, I was reading an article just the other day about how, you know, in the 1992 Olympics, Charles Barkley was arguably the best player on that Olympic dream team. And Michael Jordan was obviously Michael Jordan, but in the actual games themselves, Charles Barkley had better statistics and was the more dominating player. And they really became great friends during those 1992 Olympic Games and the training camp leading up to the Barcelona Olympics. And they've been friends for, you know, decades after that, while they were playing against each other. And then Charles Barkley got into working in television. But Barkley has been critical of Jordan's ability to be the driving force behind the Charlotte Hornets. You know, we talk on this show all the time about the job that Masai Ujiri has done with the Toronto Raptors. Of course, you know, the Raptors would have been trying to defend their NBA title this spring if the playoffs had continued. And, you know, he has made a name for himself as a great executive. Michael Jordan has kind of been the opposite, which is really interesting to think about because as a player, he hated to lose. It seems like as an executive, he might not be able to show the same killer instinct that he did when he was making all those game-winning shots.
Interesting you bring up Barkley. Maybe we can close with Sir Charles. Barkley, of course, one of more than a few players foiled by Michael Jordan during his career. I think of Barkley never won an NBA title, Dan. John Stockton, Karl Malone with the Jazz, all foiled to a certain degree by having the misfortune of playing in the same era as Michael Jordan.
That's absolutely right. There's very few athletes like that who played so many years at such a high level that they basically locked down the championships in their particular sports. And like one of the other athletes that I've thought about as far as this goes is somebody like Michael Phelps, right? Michael Phelps was so good in all of these Olympic swimming events and won so many medals that there were amazing swimmers, even from the United States, that didn't even get to win these gold medals, let alone swimmers from countries like Australia and Italy and other big swimming countries around the world. But sure, Karl Malone, John Stockton, you know, even some of these great players that I grew up enjoying, part of the Cleveland Cavaliers rotation, a player like Mark Price. For a while, it looked like Ron Harper wasn't going to win a title, but Ron Harper started winning when he became a member of the Bulls. It's really interesting for me to look at some of the highlights from these games. Patrick Ewing is an example. It's interesting to look at some of the highlights from some of these games and see the outstanding players that were on the floor. Reggie Miller, players like that who you think, gosh, you know, these were in the top 5 or 10 of the league, and they just were unlucky to play in the time of Michael Jordan and not be able to hoist the championship trophy. It's really been a lot of fun to watch these episodes of the documentary and see him on the floor doing what he did, and some of the behind the scenes material is really great, and I hope that our listeners do get a chance to see it.
Dan Friedell reflecting on The Last Dance, a 10-part documentary series about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Dan, this won't be our last dance. I know we'll be talking again soon on the show, but thanks again for being on the program.
Sonny, it's great to talk with you, of course, and look forward to seeing you in person in the studio sometime in the future, too.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Steve. That's my VOA colleague, Steve Miller. Samson O'Malley joins us now with a package of African sports news. And Samson says a South African tennis official tops his report.
Tennis South Africa chief executive Richard Glover says tennis in South Africa has been severely impacted by COVID-19. Richard, while reflecting on the disruption to the sports calendar as a result of the COVID-19, believes tennis could return sooner than most people had anticipated.
But I just worry about the long-term damage that this crisis and the regulations around this crisis will do to the very fabric of grassroots sports in this country, not just to tennis, but to all sports as well.
In Uganda, last week Tuesday was set as the date for the return of the Uganda Premier League for the final five rounds. But the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, announced an extension of the lockdown by 14 days, which made it uncertain for events that attract mass gathering, including football, to return at least before June. Bernard Bananami, Uganda Premier League CEO, says there's every possibility that the 2019-2020 Uganda Premier League season can still be concluded since the Football Federation of Uganda football calendar is yet to end.
We are still having some hopes for coming back to the stadiums and complete our five matches per team.
And now to Cote d'Ivoire, where Didier Drogba's campaign to become president of the Ivorian Football Federation has received a huge shot in the arm after former Ivory Coast captain Yaya Touré threw his support behind the Chelsea legend. According to the former Manchester City and Barcelona midfielder, Didier Drogba is the right man to lead the organization going forward. Yaya Touré, who succeeded Didier Drogba as Ivory Coast captain in 2014, said it's time for change in Ivorian football because it needs modernity. Didier Drogba's hope of becoming the president of the Ivory Coast FA suffered a massive blow at the end of April when he secured zero votes for members of the Association of Former Ivorian Footballers. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Mitro-Sredovic, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You are listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. Nigeria's Ministry of Youth and Sports and the Nigeria Economic Summit Group held a one-day video conference on a new sport policy for the country. Our friend Iron Mike Mbonye said one of the big aims is for more private investment in Nigerian sport. To find out more, Iron Mike contacted one of the conference participants. He's the president of the Badminton Federation of Nigeria and the second vice president of the Nigeria Olympic Committee, Francis Orbi.
To bring stakeholders together again and continue on the journey that was started before the pandemic outbreak. The whole essence is to be able to come up with a national sports industry policy that would put the necessary framework in place, create the enabling environment for the private sector to be attracted to invest in the sports industry in Nigeria.
How will the approval of a new sports policy drive sports development in the country, sir?
As we are now, there's no sports policy. And, you know, for investment, no investor wants to put his money in a place where he does not have some kind of guarantee or the confidence that, one, his investment will be protected, and two, he will be sure to have returns on his investment. So, for the sports industry, what the group feels is that there are three drivers, three I's and the one P. There must be incentives. It is incentives that will attract investment, and once there's investment, it will lead to the development of infrastructure. So the three I's, incentives, investment, and infrastructure. Now, for those three to happen, there must be a policy, which is the 1P. So it's no brainer. For there to be proper industrialization of the sports sector, for the sports sector to become, you know, business, to unlock the business aspect of the sports sector in Nigeria, those three I's must be there. So the policy is very critical. Government must come out, you know, with certain policies and development of the sports sector. So it should be the government that's public sector-led but private sector-driven.
Do you see the private sector through the Nigeria Economic Summit Group coming in to assist run sports, develop sports in Nigeria?
That's the whole essence of this process. And once the atmosphere is right, once the enabling environment is created, of course the private sector will come in. And that's what I said earlier, that no private sector operator will come to put money or invest money in a place where it's not sure of returns and where it does not have the confidence that its investment will be protected. So basically, once these things are done, the foundation is laid and the structures put in place by way of, you know, a national sports industry policy. That policy will contain the incentives that government is putting forward for private sector to come and play. And once that is done, then the investments will definitely come, and this will lead to the development of infrastructure, because without infrastructure, there's no way the sports industry can really thrive.
That's Francis Orbi, president of the Badminton Federation of Nigeria, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Mr. Francis Orbi, President, Badminton Federation of Nigeria, Second Vice President, Nigeria Olympic Committee. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tracy Jones-Akerol, a national women team captain, Crested Cranes, currently basing in USA, playing and studying at Seminole State College in Central Oklahoma. And my message to my fellow Ugandans and my fans is, let's be each other's keeper. Let's all protect each other. Take serious note on the preventive measures and also be very, very cautious in whatever you do. I know we all miss so much that we would be enjoying right now, but let's consider our lives first as a priority. Very soon we shall beat this disease.
The Tokyo Olympics have been pushed back 1 year because of the coronavirus pandemic. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports report, VOA's Gwen Uten tells us some infectious disease experts say organizers of next year's games should remain flexible if a coronavirus vaccine is not found.
Vaccines normally take years, if not decades, to develop. But scientists are attempting to create a coronavirus vaccine in a matter of months. Health experts are hoping a vaccine will become available by the middle of next year. But they admit the latter part of the year is a more likely scenario. And with the Tokyo Games now rescheduled for July of 2021, Olympic organizers are being advised to remain flexible. Zach Binney is a sports epidemiologist at Emory University in the United States. In a recent interview with Reuters News, he advised it would be wise to wait until a vaccine is developed before packing stadiums.
Two people is more dangerous than one, 10 is more dangerous than two, 100 is more dangerous than 10. So it's all along a continuum, but once you get up to 50,000, 70,000, 100,000 for something like college football here in the United States in some stadiums, that's an enormous amount of risk to be taking on without a vaccine.
And Benny says the Olympic Games pose a unique risk due to the influx of visitors from areas with high rates of infection.
Even next year, we're still probably going to have some areas of the world where outbreaks are popping up and there's more transmission than others. So that does make it uniquely risky because that increases the chance that you are bringing somebody in from an area where the infection is rampant, and so they may be more likely to bring it in and spread it around the Olympics. And the other element of risk is that everybody's going home once the Olympics are over, all over the globe.
Jason Kindrichuk is an infectious diseases expert at the University of Manitoba in Canada. He told Reuters he's optimistic that a vaccine will be developed in time for next year's games, but worries it might not be early enough to see if it actually works.
Not only do you have to get everybody vaccinated, but you also have to make sure that the vaccine is taken and that they have decent immune responses. So, you know, I think and you want to get people vaccinated not right at the point of the Olympics, but a little bit beforehand so they build up that protective immunity. You know, so I think all these things need to be weighed, and, you know, it may lead to some postponement or delay or further delay. But again, I think we have to get through at least probably the next couple of months to really understand whether or not the virus starts to have some resurgence in areas that lift up physical distancing measures. To see how susceptible we still are across the globe.
Dr. Kintara Iwata is an infectious disease specialist at Kobe University in Japan. Last February, he criticized the Japanese government for the way it handled a coronavirus outbreak inside a cruise ship stationed near Tokyo. He tells Reuters he now questions the country's ability to control the virus leading up to next year's games.
Japan might be able to control this disease by next summer, and I wish we could, but I don't think that would happen everywhere on Earth. In this regard, I'm very pessimistic about holding Olympic Games in next summer, unless you hold Olympic Games in a totally different structures, such as no audience or very limited participations or such and such.
As health experts continue to debate whether the coronavirus outbreak will further delay the Olympic Games, Dr. Brian McCloskey says the argument itself is premature.
Yeah, we've got 15 months more of planning and preparing for the Olympics in 2021. We've got 15 months to see how the outbreak evolves. So I think it's premature to say it's unrealistic. Clearly, having a vaccine would be extremely helpful, not just for the Olympics, but for all of us. But even without a vaccine, I think there are other mitigation measures we will look at to make sure we can run the game safely. So it's a challenge, but I'd say it's too soon to say it can't happen.
Dr. McCloskey is an expert on global health security and outbreak prevention. And he tells Reuters this is not the first time the Olympics have been staged during a health crisis.
We need to remember, you know, that previously we've run the Rio Olympics during a public health emergency for Zika. We ran the Vancouver Winter Olympics during the pandemic flu, public health emergency. You know, so we have experience where this can be done. This year for Tokyo, it got to the point where the amount of mitigation that would have been needed was more than we could ask the Japanese government to do when the Japanese government needed to be focusing on looking after its population. But that could well have changed by next year. So it's quite possible that the outbreak will be at a level where it's manageable without any particular risk. Or it may be that the vaccine arrives, it may be there's treatment available. So we just need to think through the options and not jump to too many conclusions too quickly.
The coronavirus has infected over 4 million people worldwide and killed more than 250,000. In Japan, the number of confirmed cases is near 16,000, with over 600 deaths. As sports leagues and federations around the world continue to discuss how to resume the season during the pandemic, Tokyo organizers and the IOC are focused on delivering next year's games. The Olympics have been canceled on only three other occasions because of war. Australian Olympic Committee President John Coates referenced those previous cancellations at the committee's annual meeting on Saturday. Coates said as the world emerges from the coronavirus pandemic, next year's Olympics will reflect the exuberance of the summer games that followed the two world wars of the 20th century.
Because we're all emerging from a time of global distress, and because we must wait longer than the already long wait for an Olympics, the Games of Tokyo will gently echo the sheer joy and relief of the other delayed Olympics of Antwerp in 1920 and London in 1948.
Coates added next year's Tokyo Olympics could ultimately be among the greatest games ever.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the May 12th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.